Hey folks, welcome. It's Susan Barocco here. Welcome to the call. So glad to have you guys joining us today. Good to see you. If you have a chance, if you would just type in the chat and say hello so I know that you can hear me and that my audio is working. Allison, hey there. Good to have you here today. Beth, Cynthia is with us. And Marie, welcome, welcome. Shannon. Hey, great. Thanks, guys, for saying hello. Susan is here. Chris. Laird, hey there. Glad you guys have joined us. Nice group today. Welcome. Glad to have you all in just a few days away from Christmas. My goodness, this year went by quick. But speaking of that, just for fun, I want to start with inviting you to answer the question, what is your word or theme for 2020? And I was leading a call yesterday with one of Ed's other groups, and I asked this question. And so some of the things that, and this might be something you might not know off the top of your head, but just to give you something to think about is, one person shared that her theme for 2020 or her word was dare, and that she wanted to push herself outside of her comfort zone in 2020 and really step things up. Another person shared that their word for 2020 was income, and that was what they were really looking to focus on in the coming year. So if there's anything that you're willing to share, and I love that because I think it's it just gives you an interesting kind of a grounding point, and I'll talk about that in a moment. But Shannon, thank you. Productivity and time management, and they kind of go together, don't they? Productivity and time management. So this kind of productivity is time management is a key component of that. So Cynthia says progress, and Chris says drive. Charlene says no fear. Good for you. Allison says change. And Crystal says daily habits. Wonderful. Beth says emerge. I love it. It's a great word. One of the folks in the other group shared the word skyrocket. I thought skyrocket was kind of cool. It's kind of a fun word and very visual. I love that. And let me just see. Evan, hey, welcome. And V France, I don't know your first name. I'm not quite sure, but welcome. And I know you typed in growth. And Susan, same thing, grow. And if you would just share your first name with me in the chat so I know who you are. Thank you. It's, there you go. I couldn't place your name. It's Avalicia. I hope I said that correctly. So welcome. Glad you're here. And it is good. Thanks for letting me know. It's not a surprise that most of you, because of this group and what you're doing, what you're focused on, is growth and emerging. I think all of these words are very encouraging for me to see, you know, the words like change and drive and progress. I love that. Those are all things that's something to kind of look back on. And I think as you head into 2020 and you get your business off the ground, and many of you are in different places here in this group, some are really just at the beginning, some are kind of partway through the program. It's interesting to be thinking about the kinds of things that you can do to help grow your business. And I know that the program, luckily, this program is awesome. It shares a lot of ideas and must-dos for you. So hopefully it'll be very supportive of you as you move into the new year. End of a decade, which is really fascinating. I was saying the other day, I remember 1999 and how, you know, the world was going to come to an end because, oh my gosh, we were changing into a whole new decade, 2000, everything was going to stop working. And it was really kind of it fizzled out, turned out to be really no big deal as we moved from 1999 to the year 2000. And here we are blasting another 20 years later, and here we are again. So changing into a new decade. All right. Well, I'm going to dive right in and ask you all to share a win. And I know it is, this time of year is interesting to me because sometimes people think that it slows down, and it actually, from a business perspective, and actually it can be a very busy time of the year for business. People are trying to get things done before the end of the year, get things set up for the new year so they can start off January, start strong. But let me know, type in a capital W, and it can be anything at all. It can be something simple and small, but please type in what you would consider a win for yourself in the last week or so, and let us celebrate with you. And Shannon, first out of the gate here, says a first phone call with a prospect, and it went well. Congratulations. That's a huge win. It's so interesting because sometimes it can be so nerve-wracking, you know, the first time if you haven't done this before and you're just really diving in. So congratulations. I'm glad it went well. Keep us posted on that in the Facebook group too as that progresses. Cynthia says, got through all my sessions and comfortable warm email and cold contacts. Great. Interesting you use the word comfortable. Good for you. And I'm glad to hear that because it's something that, you know, you're going to want to build a habit there and do that, if not daily, at least weekly. Beth says, I dislodged myself and completed sessions 2 and 3 and got my website feedback. And thank you. You're very welcome, Beth. Glad that was helpful for you. Evan said he had a good phone call with a prospect. Great. Another one. You guys are doing great with reaching out and actually having those discovery calls, having conversations with people. That's super. Allison says, submitted my website for review. Great, great, great. I'll be taking a look at that if I haven't already. I'll have to take a look. I'll make sure and get that to you. Chris says, I keep getting small assignments from an ad agency. Wow, that's great. That is a win. That's a great win. You know what? It's giving you experience. It's giving you a chance to build a little bit of your portfolio. And good for you. Felicius is comfortable enough to market my services just this month. Great. Takes a little bit of time to get yourself organized, but good for you for moving forward with the marketing. Susan says, got to the halfway point for a client project, talking with them about a monthly retainer project. Wow. That's amazing. I didn't realize you had a client that you were working with. That's terrific. And a retainer. What a nice way to go into the new year with a potential retainer arrangement. That's really great. Awesome. And Charlene says, chatting with an acquaintance. She asked what I do, rolled off my tongue easily, and I wasn't nervous at all. Great. It's interesting, isn't it? I struggled for a while with calling myself a writer too, for some reason. I don't know why, but that was something I had to get accustomed to. So congratulations. That is a win. Took me a while to get used to that, to say, well, I'm a writer. It just felt kind of, I don't know. It was my own. I was playing my own movie in my head and kind of getting in my way there. So congrats for not having to overcome that kind of hurdle. That's great. Awesome stuff. All right. Well, my next question for all of you is about what you're implementing. And some of you have shared a little bit in the chat already that you're working on websites and things like that. But if you haven't shared that, just let me know where you are in the program right now. So are you, what session you're in, or if you've completed all the sessions, maybe you're just getting started. Just give me an idea of where you are in the program right now so that I am I know where you're, that way I can tailor my comments and so forth as we go through today. Alicia's is session one. Shannon's in session seven already, quote and sell. Good for you. Chris is hitting complete on session eight. Wow. And Marie's still working on warm emailing. Good for you. Good, good. Charlene's just getting started on session five, getting ready to plunge into prospecting. Good. Evan's session eight also. Susan is in session five, the LinkedIn part. Great. LinkedIn's a great tool. I'm a huge fan. And Crystal's working on warm emails. And Beth is focusing on the gut checking part. So good, good, good. Well, I hope you all brought some questions from some of these sessions as well. Laird just working on session two. The first two sessions in this program are challenging and take a little bit of time. And I would encourage you, if you're in those, you know, session one, session two, try not to rush through those sessions. They're very, very important. They're foundational and they're very important. And if you need help, definitely let me know today. If you're working on it outside of this call, obviously you will be. Feel free to, that's what I really want to encourage everyone here to use the question and answer thread in the Facebook group, because these calls are only every 2 weeks. I certainly don't want you to be stuck in a situation where you're feeling stuck, you're not really sure which way to go or what to do next. You know, maybe you can't get past a certain point and you could use a little guidance. You don't want to wait for 2 weeks. You definitely want to reach out. Use the Facebook group and don't be concerned. Sometimes people will tell me, oh, I was kind of embarrassed to say this in front of, you know, the whole group or something. Don't feel that way. So many people are going through what all of you are experiencing. So, you know, we all have to start somewhere. I was there at one point in my career as well. So, and you do feel kind of like, oh, this is probably a stupid question. Don't worry about it. That's because, and the nice thing about posting it in the Facebook question and answer thread is that your question is probably a question that other people have as well. So as we answer those questions, Ed and I, other people get to benefit. So don't be shy. And same thing here today. I hope you've brought some good questions for us to talk about. And we're going to dive right in here to the question and answer segment. And so type in a capital Q and make sure your question is focused and specific and give me some background if possible. One question per person to start, simply because we've got a great group here. We've got we've got 14 people on the call, and that's terrific. So definitely want to be able to get to everyone. If we have time, we'll come back around. And also let me know if there's anything in particular you've been thinking about in terms of resolving your issue or anything that you've been considering. And Cynthia says she's working on email prospecting and picking up the pace for that. Excellent. All right, Shannon, you're up first with questions. Thanks for that. Shannon's question is, a prospect said that he'd be happy to discuss fee and or pay a referral based on percentage of sales for any intros that lead to new business. How should I approach the percentage of sales payment option, and what is a reasonable percentage to ask for? Is this a royalty situation where I could collect payment over time as sales come in? Thanks. So I think I'm going to, Shannon, I'm hoping that you are in a place where you can talk, because I'd love to just get a little bit more background and understand what exactly you are dealing with there. So
you there?
I am. Hi there.
How are you doing?
So yeah, good. Okay. Sorry. I'm just looking at something else. Sorry. Great. I'm great. I'm doing good. So this is interesting to me. So this is a prospect. What kind of work are you discussing with? What kind of projects are you discussing?
I had a phone call with him. This quote that I put on the question here was something that he wrote in his initial email. And we've since had a phone conversation. And we talked over some potential ideas, and we talked about a white paper, revamping slides for a presentation, potentially redoing copy on his website. So yeah, things like that. He's looking, he's an East Coast company, and he's looking to get some introductions into kind of a slightly different market on the West Coast.
Ah, so, okay.
Yeah, so that's kind of what he was talking about, I think, with the introduction.
So he's looking to pay you for referrals.
Yes.
In other words, you refer business to him. Is that what I'm
understanding? Yeah. I was a little confused, and I tried to clear it up during the phone call, and I think that's what I gathered, was he was wondering, because when after I talked about some of the projects, you know, I mentioned just a white paper, and I mentioned a couple specific projects. And then he said, would I be able to put that in front of the right people, put these projects that I do in front of the right people that could refer business to him? I was kind of like, well, I didn't really know how to respond to it. I kind of just sort of dodged the question and went on to some other things, and he was fine with that. We have another conversation coming up, but yeah, I thought that was kind of interesting. I didn't know if that was something that why he was expecting me to do that, or
it's interesting. I'm not sure I've heard of that quite like that before. That's why I wanted to bring you on, because I wasn't really clear. So for me, I would stay away from that type of situation. Yeah. If you want to say, here's the fee for the project. Mm-hmm. And in addition to, if I, you know, but then you sort of become his salesperson, and I'm not sure I'm super comfortable with that. I personally wouldn't be. So, you know, if he gets business out of the work you do, then what I would turn that around and say, well, then what I would prefer is to have referrals from you. So to be able to use you as a reference and for you to refer to me, but not helping him build his business. Is he a startup of some kind?
No, he's a head of sales and marketing for a pretty big beverage company.
Oh, interesting.
And he just mostly deals with East Coast companies in kind of national brands, and he's looking to break into the craft beverage market.
Gotcha.
So that's kind of how he found me.
Interesting. Okay. Oh, that's right. Cause you're doing, I would just say, you know what, thanks very much, but it's not something I want to focus on. I want to focus really on writing for you and getting the right content out and making it work. So, personally, I would kind of maybe tiptoe around that and see if you can, instead just say, you know what, if you're happy and I help you to build your business, that's the whole idea, but I'm not going to literally help you build your business. You know, the idea here is for me to create content that brings you leads and brings you new business. So, and that's what I'd rather focus on. And then if you're happy with it, I'd like to be able to use you as a reference and ask you for referrals. And you could even do any referral that you give me. So let's say somebody he knows needs help and they contact you, you know, he refers you and it turns into business. You could say, I'll give you 10% off of the next project I do for you.
If
anything turns into paying business for me.
Okay.
And that's more common. That's far more common, by the way. But it's really interesting. Interesting. You know, sales heads, you know, sometimes you get stuck and he's just thinking, oh, everybody loves commission, so I'm going to offer commission.
Yeah.
It was really, really interesting.
It was kind of funny because I feel like I kind of just got looped in after I got off the phone with him. I was like, wait a minute, what just happened?
Well, yeah. Good heavens. What did I agree to? Yeah. Oh my goodness. So yeah, I would do it. Like I said, just turn it the other way and say, look, you know, the whole goal here is for me to help you build your business.
Okay.
That said, if you're happy, I'd like to use you as a reference and ask for referrals. Any referrals that you give me that turn into paying business, you know, a paying client, I'll give you 10% off your next project or something like that. And you can write that into the agreement if and when it gets to that point. So what are next steps? Are you going to be talking again?
Yeah. He's going to get in touch with me after the holidays, but he seems really enthusiastic. You know,
Great.
He's like, and he actually found me just cold on LinkedIn.
Awesome.
So it was
I love it.
Yeah, I literally just updated my LinkedIn profile and then he found it and it was
bada bang. There's a need then. That's really cool. That's really exciting. Well, keep us posted. You know, even I know things probably won't, not much will happen over the next week or two, obviously, but after that, definitely keep us posted. That's exciting.
Great. All right. Thanks, Susan.
You're welcome. Good luck with that.
Thanks.
Awesome. That's a unique question. I've not heard anyone offering that kind of thing before. Kind of funny. Interesting. Chris, you're up next. Chris's question, is there an ideal percentage of time established freelancers spend on prospecting? I'm finding it challenging to balance servicing clients while getting new ones. Oh, age-old question, Chris. And so there's a couple different things to consider, Chris, as you're thinking about prospecting. One of the easiest traps to fall into is when you get a client or you get a couple of clients, you stop prospecting altogether. It's really hard to stay motivated to continue to prospect once you land a couple of good clients. And it's also a time factor. So as you mentioned, it is hard to balance that. So what I would recommend is that you set a minimum goal on a weekly basis. And if that means that maybe every Monday or every Friday, you carve out an hour and you spend some time prospecting, sending out a couple of warm emails, following up with maybe non-responders, not yet readies, that kind of thing. Plug an hour in somewhere, you know, even if it's a half an hour. Or maybe you say, all right, I'm going to do 2 hours over the course of a week. And you break that down into 4 half-hour segments, if that's something that makes sense for you. So, you know, what I recommend is that you do it consistently, but make it small enough or in small enough chunks that you can not feel overwhelmed or, you know, caught off track by doing that. Because you certainly don't want to get behind on any client projects. So that's obviously critical. But I would say, doing it in a way that gives you enough time to, you know, break it down into smaller chunks, very doable. And if you look back and at the end of the week, you say, oh, I only spent a half an hour. I was planning on spending 2 hours. It's better than nothing. And you want to just keep that going and definitely keep that going. So I hope that helps. But it is a delicate dance that we do when you start to get clients. And especially if prospecting is not your favorite thing, which for most folks, it probably isn't top of the list. It's hard to stay focused and get back and keep on that because it's nothing is more unnerving than to get through a project and suddenly realize the project is wrapping up. The last payment is in your bank account already. And you're thinking, uh-oh, you know, now what do I do? Where do I go from here? So consistency in prospecting is key if you're serious about growing your business and getting to an income level that that makes you happy. It's got to be, absolutely has to be a weekly part of your weekly routine. And start small. Like I said, if you've got a lot going on, then you know, and even if it's something that maybe for a while you do an evening where you quote unquote stay late at the office, so to speak, and you stay at your desk a little bit later, or maybe you go in a little bit earlier, maybe you start a half an hour earlier at your desk than you normally would, and take that time to do some prospecting, you know, just figuring out, or maybe, you know, doing it while you're eating your lunch. I do a lot of that. I'm sitting at my desk eating my lunch and doing other things at the same time. Sometimes it just has to be. It's not a great way to live in terms of taking care of yourself mentally and intellectually. But I think that because you're all so new and getting your businesses off the ground, it's important to know that this is a habit that should not be allowed to slide. And even if you do, you scale back, it's okay, but just keep doing it. I hope that helps. And Evan, question from Evan. I'm hoping to land my first paying client soon. When it comes to sending the initial invoice, do you have recommendations on invoicing software and how to collect payment? Also, is it okay to have money sent to my name directly as opposed to the business name? I haven't set up an official business yet. So good questions. Great questions. And you're at that point in the program that's this all makes sense. And so congrats. We'll be keep us posted in the Facebook group, because that's really exciting. So the initial invoice, I would use PayPal, something that typically other companies are familiar with. And you can, PayPal's really easy to set up. You can accept credit cards easily if the client wants to pay you using a credit card. That's very easy to do through PayPal, or if they want to just transfer you the money right out of their bank account, they get to choose. So PayPal is the first one that comes to mind. There are lots of other ways to do it. FreshBooks is an accounting software that also allows you to accept payments. If you go into the Facebook group and in the search bar, if you type in the word, I think if you do hashtag resources, you will see a pinned thread somewhere in there that has a document attached to it. And it has a list of all different kinds of software that are commonly used, freelancers' favorites that are commonly used. So if you go into the Facebook group and search for that, you'll see other options as well. Lots of different ways to pay online. But PayPal is the first one that comes to mind, because globally speaking, most people are familiar with PayPal. They're comfortable with it. It feels safe to them to use. So just bear that in mind. Is it okay to have money sent to your name directly? Absolutely. You're a freelancer. That's absolutely fine. So initially, you might set up your PayPal account with just your name and maybe have it go to a personal account of some sort. I would definitely recommend that you set up a business checking account so that the money does not get mixed in with your personal finances. That's a really important thing as you move forward. And for those of you who are just getting started in this program, you don't necessarily have to be too concerned right now. But as you move forward, I think that it's important to keep it separate so that you're paying your expenses out of a separate account. And even if you loan money to yourself and you put money from your personal account into your business account, which I've done many times over the years, especially in the beginning, to pay for different softwares or different technology I was using, sometimes I do that and then just pay myself back when I finally get paid, that kind of thing. So it's okay to move money back and forth, but I would strongly recommend that you have a separate checking account. And I don't believe that there's a cost for those. I don't think you can find business accounts that do not have a monthly fee. All right. Charlene, you're up next. Charlene's question. As I work through my initial prospects list, is there any reason why I shouldn't contact prospects out of town or out of state as I encounter them? Absolutely not, Charlene. Not at all. I think, I do business with and have clients all over the country and Canada as well. And so absolutely. I mean, that's the beauty of what the internet brings to all of us, is to give us the opportunity to work beyond our immediate physical geographic location. And for some folks who come through this program, they live in pretty remote areas of the country. The population's not very high, or there just aren't a lot of, they're in a small town somewhere and there's just not a lot of business locally for them. And what's nice about this is that it gives you that online presence. You can do business with anyone, anywhere. Many of my clients I have never met face to face. That's just lovely to do that. And when I can, if they come to my part of the world and I know they're in town, they let me know. I always make an effort to go and meet with them so I can meet them face to face. But many of my clients I've never met face to face over the years. So, and people are okay with that these days. It's not a weird thing anymore. It was a time maybe when it was a little less acceptable, but these days people do business. Think about the websites that like Upwork or Fiverr. You never even get to see half the time a picture of the person that's doing the work for you. You're just emailing back and forth or messaging back and forth, and that's it. You certainly don't ever talk on the phone or anything. So absolutely go for it. Yeah, absolutely go for it. And Susan, you're up next. Her question is, knowing that LinkedIn changes all the time, and it does, Do you feel it is still important to subscribe to the premium service and the advantages gained? So Susan, this is very much a case by case with LinkedIn. It's an incredible tool, and for freelancers in particular, I strongly recommend it. If you don't know the tool, I have a recorded training in session 5. If you're not super comfortable with LinkedIn, I put together a training course that allows you to understand a little bit more about how LinkedIn works and how it's different from Facebook and so on. Anyway, all of that being said, my typical recommendation for LinkedIn paid versus not paid is to use LinkedIn thoroughly at the free level. And because LinkedIn, the minute you start exceeding your limits, like there's a limit on number of searches you can perform, there's a limit on other different types of activities, how many people you can message and that kind of thing. As a matter of fact, with the free, I'm not sure you can message at all now that I'm thinking about it. But in any event, there are limits. And what I recommend is you use it until LinkedIn says you've reached your limit. And believe me, they will send you a pop-up that says, hey, but for $30 a month, you can, you know, pay or pay now and upgrade, and all of this will no longer be a problem. So they'll let you know as soon as you've reached your limits. If you're using LinkedIn that much, then it's probably worth it. The second thing is that in my mind, LinkedIn is always worth it. There's a couple different levels. And for me, I look at LinkedIn as I pay for that the same way I pay for my website, you know, with the same mindset. So I think about, yes, I have to pay for hosting and I pay for my email service. I have to have those to do business. And as far as I'm concerned, LinkedIn is right in that same category. I have to have LinkedIn to do business. It's that important to me personally. The other option that you have, Susan, is to sign up for the free trial. It's 30 days, and use the heck out of it in the 30 days and see what you think. See if it makes a difference. If you're finding like, wow, these are some pretty cool features I don't want to lose. That's the best way. Someone just asked this question, I think yesterday, same kind of question. They were looking at Sales Navigator, which is even more expensive, but has a lot more features. And I recommended the same things. Sign up for the free account. They'll let you know when you're getting close to your 30-day trial, when it's ending, because then they want to encourage you to obviously sign on permanently. And it's month to month, by the way. You're not signing up. So even if you say, you know what, I'll pay for it for 2 months and see if I'm starting to get a return on my investment. Is that, because for me, that's what it's all about. If the tool is going to pay for itself, so to speak, then yeah, I'm going to invest in it. And for me, LinkedIn, 100% more than pays for itself. For the 700 and whatever I spend, I have the premium account. I spend $60 a month, which is 720 or so. $700 really in comparison to what I get out of it, absolutely worth it for me personally. So it's kind of a personal choice. I wouldn't go to Sales Navigator. I wouldn't spend that kind of money. Is LinkedIn worth it? Yes. But I don't, the way that my business model, it's not, LinkedIn Navigator isn't necessarily a great fit for my business model. So, you know, that's why I'm saying there's some personal choice involved here too. But I would strongly recommend sign up for the free. And then make a point in the 30 days that you're on the free trial, use it, use it, use it. Explore everything, see what you think, and use the daylights out of it, and then decide. And hopefully that'll make it a little bit easier for you to make the decision. The other thing to consider, Susan, one other point, is that you may not be far enough into your business to justify the expense. You know, it's kind of that's one of those fine lines also. It's like, okay, if I don't have any income coming in and I have to pay for this out of my own pocket, how do I want that to work? You know, what do I think? So that's why the free trial is really nice, because it'll give you a month to go gangbusters and reach out to lots of people and really get, you know, build some momentum on LinkedIn. And then you can decide, yeah, you know what, maybe I've picked up a client or two in that effort. And that might be a good thing for you to plan to do in January. So starting in January, right after the holidays, dive in and just immerse yourself in how LinkedIn, and see what happens and decide. And you can always cancel your trial. You can go month to month. You can cancel at any time. You know, it might be worth investing $60 to see. So maybe I get 2 months. I get a month for free, and then I plan to pay just for 1 month. And because I didn't have enough time, or geez, maybe I just feel like I'm just getting started. So again, very much a personal choice, but I have seen LinkedIn work wonders for freelancers, especially for what we do as writers. It's a really great place to be. And who did I have on earlier here? Shannon was even saying that somebody found her already. She just changed her LinkedIn profile and somebody found her on LinkedIn. So yeah, it's a good it's a good tool. Allison, hey there, you're up next. And question, Allison's question, I'm wondering if I should put a phone number on my website. If so, would it be better for me to get a new number to put on the website rather than my personal number? Another good question. Very common for people to put their phone number on the website. I think that if you decide to do that, getting a separate number would make sense. For me, I'll just explain the phone number that I use for my business is my personal cell phone. It's just, you know, my message on there says, is kind of generic. Hey, you've reached Susan Baracco, please leave a message. So I don't really, you know, mention my company. But I use that for business. That's 100% and has always been my business line, if you will. That's my business phone number. I have it on my business cards. I have it in the bottom of my email signature, places like that. I don't think I have it on my website. Perfectly honest, I don't remember. But honestly, I think these days that people are very comfortable with emails, that they're perfectly happy reaching out to you by email. At least if they can hit email and send, they're happy to do that. And, so one of the things, you know, that's a very personal choice. It depends, I think, too, on the industry that you're calling on and the industry you're targeting is what's the market like? Are they the kind of people that talk on the phone a lot? or is it a more progressive type of something a little more trendy? Some like software companies, they'd rather text. If you're going to do that to allow people to text you, that's fine. And, you know, some people prefer to communicate via text as opposed to email or phone. So, all of that's starting to evolve. But the other thing you could do is have an autoresponder. So let's say that someone goes to your website, they're interested in talking with you, have a form that they fill out. And as soon as they complete the form, it sends them an automated email that says, hey, got your email. If you'd like to call me, here's my phone number. So, you know, there's different ways to do it. I actually have, my calendar tool right on my website so people can just book time. I send people to my website all the time. Just find a time that works for you. That's my calendar. Just put it in there. And that generates an automatic email. Hey, thanks for booking with me. Here's how to reach me if you need to. So there's different ways to do it. It's not an all or nothing type of an answer. There's a couple different ways that you can approach it. But using your cell phone is fine as a business, because that way I take it with me and I do a fair amount of traveling. So for me, I always have my business, my cell phone on me. So it just works for me and for what I do. Oh, there you go. There you go, Charlene. Yes. LinkedIn. They give, free month of premium. That's their standard offer. So I would go for it and play with it, like I said, but just be sure that in the 30 days that they give you, use it a lot and make sure and evaluate based on what you see happening. Awesome. Beth, you're up next. Great questions today. And thank you all for being so active today. And when you bring these questions that we have things to talk about, it's awesome. So thank you. Thanks for participating today. So Beth, question that Beth has is, do you or Ed recommend using a time tracker such as Toggle, in order to track accurately how much time you spend on each project and how much time you prospect, do administrative tasks, et cetera. It seems like it would be useful, but might be a personal choice. And so yes, my answer would be yes, it is definitely a personal choice. I think it depends, Beth, on what you're going to do with that information. So the way that I do it, even today with all of my prospects, and my prospecting, is I use my calendar as my to-do list, and I use it as my time tracker. So I block out 2 hours to work on a particular project. I am committed to working for 2 hours on that project. I don't answer the phone. I don't answer emails. I might take a break, get up and, you know, stretch and step away from my desk for a minute or something like that. But if I've blocked 2 hours, I work on that project for 2 hours. And that's taken a little bit of getting used to. But for me, it was all about simplifying. And do I need to track my hours? No. When I hear about people tracking hours, oftentimes it's because they charge by the hour, which Ed and I both strongly advise against. Don't get into charging by the hour, charge by the project. And I like to track my the time I work on a project, because I do, for me, it's for internal use only, so to speak. So I like to see, all right, I estimated, you know, I priced this project at X number of dollars, thinking it was going to take me 10 hours. And then I can go back and look and say, oh, wow, it actually took me like 15. So the next time I'm in that situation and I have an opportunity to work on the same kind of, maybe it's a white paper or something like that, then I know, okay, I need to build in more time for myself. So to inform your pricing and your decision-making and the way you run your business, yes, it's a great thing to do. Do you need to spend money? Again, personal choice. If you feel that this is an important set of information and data that you need to help you build your business, then it obviously the answer would be yes, go for it. But you could do it in a more simple way simply by using your calendar effectively. And sometimes I change it. Sometimes I get, you know, there's a fire somewhere that I have to go put out in regards to, you know, I plan to spend 2 hours today on this project. I didn't. I only spent one. Then I adjust my calendar and I change the amount of time that I actually did spend so that I know that it's my calendar is an accurate representation of what I was doing on that particular day. And that I can see, okay, I spent a half an hour on emails. I spent, and mine's, the way I have it broken down is like half an hour chunks, which works for me. So some people spend 15 minutes on LinkedIn in the morning, that kind of stuff. I might do more than one thing. So I'd block out a half an hour, I'd spend 15 of it on LinkedIn, and then the other 15 maybe responding to emails, something like that. So you can be as creative with your calendar as you want, or if Toggle is something that just seems to be the right thing for you, then go for it. I can tell you also that over the years, I have jumped in to working with a particular tool, thinking it was just going to be the end all be all, it'd be great. I just canceled a subscription to a software that I had been using because I realized I don't think I've logged in like 3 months. Well, I think I don't need to pay for that anymore. So, you know, so things come and go. Don't worry, you know, because you might grab onto a software, start using it and think, oh, this is going to be great. And then as time goes by, you realize, geez, it's not working the way I thought, or I'm not using it the way, you know, as much as I intended to. So, and that's okay too. I mean, I've started and stopped multiple different kinds of software over the years thinking, yeah, this is going to be great. And then realizing I'm just not using it. So I hope that helps. All right. Great questions today. Cynthia is up next. And Cynthia's question, when I initially set up my LinkedIn, I requested anyone and everyone that were writers to connect with me. Now thinking I should clean up or eliminate some of these unknown people connections and connect mostly with members that are going to connect for my niche market. And should I do this? Yes, absolutely. So I think in the beginning, especially if you're new to LinkedIn, and in the beginning, when LinkedIn first came on the scene, none of us really knew what we were doing with it. So we're just like connecting with everybody. In the time since then, I've realized that I need to be very selective about who I connect with. And so as a result, I only have about 2,200 connections. I've been, and that might sound like a lot, but I've been on the tool for 13 years. I've been on LinkedIn for 13 years. I think it's been around for 16. I think it was launched 16 years ago, and I've been using it for 13. So I've been on the tool. I've been using this platform for a very long time. In the beginning, I would connect with lots of people. And like I said, it's evolved. The tool itself has evolved too over time. But today, I'm very selective. Very, very selective. I do get plenty of invites. And if it's someone that if they don't introduce themselves and they don't do a proper invitation, the likelihood of me connecting with them is pretty low. I look at someone and I have no idea who they are, and we might share some other connections in common. We might have mutual connections, but I'm like, if I don't, I need more information to go on. And if you can't take the time to write me a personalized invite, then I'm just not going to bother. And it's got to be, and I look to see if the person is in my target market or might be connected to people in my target market. So those are my criteria. Do I know you, or did I meet you somewhere? Did you take the time to send me a decent invitation, personalized? And how are we connected? When someone reaches out, hey, I want to be part of, they do the canned invite and we have nothing, no mutual connections. I just see ya. I just ignore, because I really don't want everybody and anybody in my network. That's not the way my business works. And so for my business model, it doesn't make sense to do that. And I would say the same thing for you folks. For anyone on the call who's thinking, now I'm starting to build my LinkedIn network, be selective and be strategic. Think about who these people are. In the training that I do in session 5, I talk a lot about this. There's a whole session there, a section where I talk about who to connect with. And so you want to think about people that are also calling on your target market. Those are the kind of people. So if, let's say I'm focusing on small business, I want to connect with a small business attorney, as many small business attorneys as I can, right? So I want to network with them. I want to network with CPAs who focus on that same industry, calling on the same people, because we're not competitive in any way, but we're calling on the same audience. And if you as a small business owner saw that I was connected to your CPA, what would that do? That would automatically give me credibility. Because you'd be thinking, oh, they know Charlie. Gosh, they're connected to Charlie. That means they must be okay, right? You do get, there's credibility that goes with that connection. So, like I said, attorneys, CPAs, marketing firms, anybody who's targeting your audience, your audience already, they'd be good connections for you to make. But other writers, it's okay to connect with them, but I wouldn't, they're not going to have necessarily the network that you want to have access to. And if you're considering it, then I would look at their network a little bit. So you dig around, look at their profile. Don't be afraid to look at their profile and check them out, see what they do, and take a look at who's in their network, if you can, from their profile. And then you can decide if they're the right person to connect with or not. So I hope that helps. All right. Another question from Susan. She's curious, is my planning system paper or electronic based? I love to handwrite. But the only thing that I do for handwriting is journaling. so that's the only thing that I handwrite. Everything else that I do for planning is all online. And for the simple reason that I like to have it out somewhere where I can access it. So as I mentioned, I do a fair amount of traveling. And so sometimes I'm working someplace other than my office, and I might bring my Surface because it's much smaller than my laptop. So if I'm going somewhere, I'm going away for a couple of days, I'll grab my Surface and whatever. But I don't like to carry a lot of papers with me. I don't want anything to get lost, and yet I want to be able to access everything from any device, whether it's my smartphone, whether it's my Surface, my PC, whatever. So for that reason alone, all of my planning is electronic based, and it's, I don't have to worry about where the heck did I put that, you know, I lost track of it, or maybe I went somewhere and I left it, you know, on someone's desk or someplace, you know, where, and I, that has happened to me before. So I'm kind of an electronic, I'm kind of a techie person in the sense that I like all of my stuff online, because then I know it's, I put it, you could put it in Dropbox. I use Dropbox. I use Google Docs, you know, a couple different types of things where tools that you can access from multiple devices. And that way it's redundant too. You don't have to worry about losing it. All right, Crystal, you're up next. Crystal says, I'm starting my business while working full-time. From a time management perspective, would you recommend spending any time posting to freelance websites or job boards, or focusing time on researching email prospects? Only focusing time on, sorry. No, I gotcha. So good question. I started doing this the same way. I was working full-time and starting my business about 7 years ago. And I ended up connecting with, so yes, I would apply to some of those freelancing websites like Fiverr or Upwork to see if I could get some momentum, at least a couple of projects. I didn't consider those to be quote unquote paying customers, you know, paying clients like we do here in the B2B Launcher program, because they were just, you didn't have a relationship. You just were, you know, here, write this piece. Here's your money. Thanks. Goodbye. You know, I mean, it's not really, you know, you're not actually establishing a client relationship. So job boards, yes. What I did was I looked at, I started writing for an agency. So I became their contract writer, and it wasn't super full time, but it was consistent. And gave me lots of experience, gave me lots of exposure to different needs, different industries. I wrote for all different kinds of industries. And this was an agency that did websites and social media. So I would write blogs. I would ghostwrite blogs for all their clients or a number of their clients. I would do web copy. I would do, I even worked for the company themselves doing like a, I helped them to write bids for bigger customers that they were going after. I'd help them to do bid response, you know, RFP responses and things of that nature. Executive summary. I updated their executive summaries. I did all kinds of different things for that agency. It was a fairly small agency, but they kept me busy. So that was a good way for me to really get a ton of experience. It was challenging. And so I understand, you know, finding the time to do projects, trying to do both is really a challenge. But what was nice was that it was consistent, and I knew it helped me to build my portfolio so that I had some samples and things like that. So I would look, take a look to see if you're connected with anyone who works at an agency. You know, spend some time on LinkedIn. Look for smaller agencies or agencies, even in your area. You know, we were talking earlier about, geez, now I live on the East Coast, but this agency that I worked for was in Minneapolis. So it had nothing to do with, it was actually a woman who was a manager of the social media aspect of the work that they did was a colleague of mine. And she and I had been in another company together. And so she, you know, when I reached out and said, hey, I'm changing what I'm doing. She said, absolutely. I need your help. Come on board. And she hired me pretty quickly. So it was a good fit. It really worked out nicely I did that for a couple of years. I think I worked for them for over 2 years. So I would recommend maybe looking, don't overlook your network. You never know who might be in your network that can help you out with that. from a time management perspective, I think that the biggest challenge with working full time is that I was working 7 days a week when I was doing that, because I had enough demand that I had to work every night, and I had to work Saturdays and Sundays. I didn't have a choice, because I couldn't get it all done and do my full-time job all at once. So for a while I was working 7 days a week, and that was, it was very challenging. So just be mindful of, you know, it's really important for you to understand, how do I get enough business in the door? Where's my break point? You know, where's my absolute break point in terms of, I've got to get to this level of income before I can leave my job, but is it realistic? So, you know, in the beginning, you're new and you're trying to find clients and you're trying to get paid decently. It's hard to get paid decently when you're really new. Sometimes you've got to take what you can get, take lower paying gigs just to get the experience and get the experience and the samples under your belt. And sometimes that's tough. So, but from a time management perspective, what I would recommend is that you do a little bit of both. So maybe apply for a few freelance, you know, do a few things on the websites, but I'd look for agencies. I'd look for job boards. You know, maybe somebody's looking for a blog writer on a job board. Definitely worth spending a little time there. And in the meantime, also do a little bit of that prospecting. Reach out to agencies, do prospecting in the market that you're targeting. It would be something I would recommend that you do, you know, kind of fire on from multiple angles, if at all possible. So it's a very long answer to your question, but I hope that was helpful. All right. More questions. Yay. You guys are great. This is wonderful. Keep them coming. So next up is Shannon, and her question: do you have, or have you ever had, a daily writing practice? Yes. And I'm trying to establish 15 minutes of practice writing each day, more focused than personal journaling. And I'm having problems knowing where to start. This sounds so simple, but for some reason, whenever I sit in front of the keyboard to do this, I get overwhelmed or start thinking that there are more important things to do and no writing gets done. Any advice or tips? It's a great question. You know, I have stopped and started that practice a couple of times over the years. Stopped for reasons really more of just, I just don't have the time, right? So it just, and which isn't a good thing, because as a writer, you should be writing every day. So one of the things you could do, and I don't know how many of you have been through AWAI and any of their courses, but one of the courses that I took, I was a member for quite some time and took a lot of their courses. And one of the ones I did was you would copy an article that's already been written. And it sounds incredibly boring, and it is. But if you're really stuck, find an article that you like, that you think is really well written, and just word for word, and they suggested handwriting. I think that's kind of cool if you have the time, but you can even type it. But the idea is to start training your brain to look at how that's written and to copy it, and you're starting to internalize that style of writing. So even something like that, there's not really a lot of creativity required, because you're just literally copying word for word someone else's work. But if it's well written, you're going to get a benefit out of it. So that might be a really simple way, is you start by copying one article, or even a short article, a short blog, or some article somewhere that you found that you like or that you think is very well written. Start by doing that, and that'll at least get you into the habit of doing this on a regular basis. And then brainstorming is something that I think Ed actually has a thing where he almost does like stream of consciousness writing sometimes. It's just anything that pops into his brain, he writes down. And it might not be in sentences, it might be in bullet points or that kind of thing. But journaling is not like out of bounds necessarily for this. I think that journaling, even if you write down, so here's a question. Maybe you have a different question for yourself every morning, or maybe you have the same question for yourself every morning. What's the most important thing that I need to do today? And answer that question. Think about your day, and just get yourself started with a simple question. And again, 15 minutes, you know, if you're a good writer and you enjoy writing, that you might find that suddenly becomes not enough time. But this is a habit. So keep in mind that you're not going to do it perfect the first time, and it's going to take a little time to get used to and to build up to writing more, that 15 minutes or the full 30 minutes. I would start with the expectation that I'm going to write something every day. And whether it takes you 5 minutes or 15 minutes doesn't really matter. I would suggest that you think, okay, I'm going to answer a question for myself every day. Maybe there's a question about, and it could be, you know, that could be a good place to start is answering some questions about your business. Think about your business. What's the one thing I could do today to move my business forward? And write a sentence about it. Don't just put warm emails. But why? You know, so explain why. Go deeper into that answer and say, because I need to reach out in order to, you know, I need to meet my numbers. It's important for me to do that. Or, you know, explain it to yourself and spend some time doing that. So I'm just kind of coming up off the top of my head here with some ideas for you to hopefully give you some direction in terms of the daily writing. But just be patient with yourself. It is a habit that you need to build. I hope that was helpful. All right, Chris, another question. Kind of bundled two together there. Not a problem. Chris asks, how long did it take you to make the switch from full-time to freelance, and what were the biggest challenges? And then I answered some of that. And then would you have done the agency work if they didn't let you use the samples? So yes, I would have done the agency work, because if there's one thing it taught me, you know, I was just talking, just answering the question about daily writing. Holy cow. Did I have a daily writing habit? Holy moly. And it wasn't a habit. It was because I had to. I was being paid for those articles and I had to get them written. So it taught me, it's not just about the samples. I learned so much writing for that agency. I learned because they put me in front of clients. They were comfortable enough with letting me talk directly to clients and ask them questions and things like that. So I'd sit in on development calls and I'd be able to reach out via email to their different clients and say, hey, can you tell me a little more about this? Ask questions. I learned so much about writing. And it was, so for me, even though I wasn't getting paid very well, for me, that was an investment in my education. I was really, really, you know, very naive, very, very much just getting started, very naive, really not knowing much. I was a decent writer, but I really didn't know how to write for business. And I needed to learn that. So yes, 100% the agency work I would do again in a heartbeat without getting samples out of it, because I learned a whole lot of other things. And I got an inside look at an agency. I understood more about how they approached their clients, how they worked with clients. Taught me a lot more than just, hey, I got a handful of samples out of it. So you need to look at it from a bigger picture perspective in terms of that opportunity. What's it going to give you? What I tell people these days is, if you're going to dive into agency work, set a time frame for yourself and say, you know what, I'd like to, maybe they have a big project that they want to bring you on. To work on. Maybe it's a big website rewrite, or it's a website build or something like that. Set some boundaries. See how it goes. Give yourself a month or 2 months or 3 months to work with them, and then decide, do I want to continue or should I step away? And if you're good, they're going to keep feeding you work. You know, if you're easy to work with and you get things done on time, you meet your deadlines. But again, it teaches you all of that, how to be easy to work with, how to meet your deadlines, how to understand what a client really wants, how to revise. You know, I learned a lot about writing by being in that position. All right. So your first question was, how long did it take you to make the switch from to a full-time freelance? You know, honestly, I think I worked probably for a year doing both. And at first, it wasn't so bad because they didn't give me a ton of clients to work with. So the agency gave me a couple to get me started. I had like a website project. And the nice thing about a website project is because they were building the website from scratch, there was these big, long lead times. So I worked, you know, in the first couple months that I worked for them, it wasn't this high volume demand. I was just getting ramped up. So it wasn't too bad in the beginning. But as they took on more clients and they realized they could rely on me, they started dumping a lot more work on me. And then it started to get really challenging. I mean, I was working an extra 20 hours a week probably for that agency. At least that felt like more at the time. And it was really challenging to fit it all in because I was working 40 hours a week to begin with. And so it could take up to a year, but again, personal choice. And it's got to do with what are your income goals and how quickly do you need to reach them? And the nice thing about doing the agency work is that that was helping me to reach my income goals. Yeah, I was killing myself work-wise. It was really challenging, but it did help me to reach the income goal sooner. And I used them almost like as an anchor client. So I knew, okay, I'm going to get X amount of work and X amount of hours every week from them. So then I would look to say, okay, I want to add two other client projects on per month or maybe three to help bring my income up and still give me, fill in the rest of my time once I finally did leave my full-time job. So everybody's different, you know, I would have done it longer, except that the company I was working for eliminated the sales department and I was on the sales team. And so they let everybody go on the same day. And I was elated. I was so happy because I was kind of stuck. I was feeling like, oh, I'm not sure. I'm not really making enough money. And then when my full-time job said, you know, you're done at the end of the week, I was like, that's cool, because now I was scared to death. Don't get me wrong. I was really thinking, oh my gosh, how am I going to pay my bills? But I was excited too, because at that point I had had enough experience where I thought, all right, I can do this. I'm going to work my butt off to make this work because I am not getting another job. No way. And if you, I actually looked, I knew things were starting to go downhill with the company I was working for full time. And at one point I had actually thought about pitching to them, let me work full time, reduce my hours to half so that to part time so that I can work part time for you. And then they ended up just laying us all off anyway. So, but you know, look for other ways to make this work. Finding a part time job might be a better alternative for you. But you know, just be creative and limit it if possible. Give yourself some deadlines because you don't want to burn yourself out. And I was getting burned out for sure. All right. Whew. Lots of great questions. It's already after two. You guys are just, you're on it today. Lots of good stuff. Let me see. So Charlene, you're next. And her question, when working with clients long distance, do you Skype or what do you use or recommend? And do you record conversations? So I do not use Skype. I've never been a fan of Skype. I don't know why. Skype and I don't get along. I use what we're on right now. I use Zoom and I have my own. All right, Chris, you're welcome, Chris. Take care. Happy holidays to you too. Keep us posted on how things go. And so I use Zoom because I much prefer this tool. I pay $14.99 a month to have complete access to a lot of features and I absolutely love it. It's easy to use. It's easy for other people to join the call. I can share my screen. I can play videos. I can record. There's no extra cost. I get all of that stuff. And I probably ought to get a residuals from Zoom for this. But I really like the tool. It's easy. And I like being able to see, as I mentioned earlier, I don't get to meet my clients in person. So it's really important for me to have a visual for us to see each other and to connect with the work that I do. It's really important. I want to be able to see my client. I want to be able to build a relationship with them by us having video phone calls. So it's really an important part of what my business, you know, what my business model is about. So, and yes, I do record. It's not an extra cost. You can record it to the cloud. You have a certain amount of space there, I think, at the $14 level, or you can record it right to your desktop or to your own computer. But yes, I do record conversations depending on the conversation. So if I'm getting into actually doing work with the client where we're starting on the project, then I'll tell them, yep, I'm going to record part of this conversation so that I don't have to take notes. It's fabulous. So all the way around, and it'll record video too. You know, it records the whole thing, whatever you're whether it's screen share, whether it's video, you know, YouTube, having a conversation via video, it records all of that. So I like Zoom just because it's so easy to use. And it's easy for people to join in too. And you click the link and it takes you to this. It tells you whether or not you need software, and then you're just, and you're in. It's not hard. And once you do it once, then, you know, you're all set. So anyway, yes, that's what I would recommend. However, use Skype. If it's something that you're comfortable with, it's free, you know, use Skype. But I would definitely recommend, if you're going to start working with people in different parts of the world, then have some type of a video option so that they get to see you. And that's the best way to meet, if you will, so that they actually get to see who they're working with. And you can read people's faces and that kind of thing. Awesome. Wow. Great questions today. Great, great, great. You're welcome, Charlene. And so I want to ask you folks a question. What's been valuable so far? What have we talked about? Because we have talked about a lot of things, a lot of things. Boy, all over the place today, all different types of, all ends of the spectrum in terms of getting started all the way to, you know, charging your clients, how to invoice them. And geez, it's been a little bit of everything today, and that's terrific. So if there's anything in particular that stood out for you that really was helpful, just type in a quick capital V and let me know. Let me know what's been helpful. It's really been a lot about LinkedIn. We talked a lot about LinkedIn today. Talked a lot about working with clients, working with agencies. Lots and lots to learn. Shannon says, I might check out some agency work for some quick wins. I think that would be great. Agencies are always looking for new, and for people that they can tap if a big project comes in, because sometimes they're saying, okay, right now we don't need you, but we're, you know, waiting to get an answer on a big project, then we're going to need you. So that, you know, their needs kind of fluctuate. So agencies, depending on what they do and what type of, if they're marketing agency, website development, you know, social media, it really depends on what services they offer. But the nice thing is that agencies are like your target market. There's different sizes of agencies, and you might be able to do pretty well getting some work. They're not going to pay you super well. I only worked for one agency that was massive that paid me decently, but everybody else was. But that's not, I wasn't there for the pay. I was there for the experience. Awesome. Beth, the ideas for daily writing inspiration were great. Didn't expect to be so. Well, yay. I'm glad you're so inspired. That's great. It's great. Sometimes we get stuck, right? We get the white page syndrome or blank page syndrome. It's like, oh, I don't know what to write. So Charlene says, prospecting. I can get stuck in the how-to, so having a pathway helps me keep moving, like LinkedIn. Excellent. And Felicia said, I really like the goal-inspired writing ideas too. I'll try this. Yeah, definitely. Especially with the, you know, we're on the doorstep of 2020. What are some things you're thinking about that would be good? I mean, that'd be a great way to get you started, is just a writing prompt would be to start writing your goals, get your, you know, what would you like to see happen? What do you know you have to do? What are the most important things? Maybe the top three or four things. And, awesome. Allison said being discerning about LinkedIn connections. Yep. Be selfish is what I like to say about LinkedIn connections. It's like, if you're not going to do anything for me, I'm not interested. Sometimes people want to connect with you. Other writers, there's two ways to look at it. Other writers might be looking to see who you're connected to so that they can poach your clients from you. But there's a way to keep your connections. Well, your connections can usually see your whole network. So I'm not sure if there's a way to shut that off completely. All right. Susan says, your comments about how to do agency work is really interesting, especially about how to set a time limit. I also really appreciate your comments on how to use LinkedIn. Yeah, setting a time limit for agency work, because it will, you could get you churn and burn kind of thing. So you just want to say, okay, do I, how much time? And I wouldn't say, oh, I'm only going to work for them for 3 months. Say, you know what? In 3 months, I'll reevaluate. So at the 3 month mark, like what I did with the agency I was working with, I worked with them for over 2 years. And at certain points, like this time of year, I would say to them, you know, I'd like to have a conversation about 2020, what's going to be happening coming up for you folks. And one of the things I'd like is to talk about my fee. At this point, I've been working with you for, you know, 6 months or whatever the case may be. And so I'd be looking for to, and so I'd do nominal increases. So instead of them paying me, you know, $100 a blog, I'd ask for 150 or 200 or something like that. And it was just enough to, you know, to get me up to the next level and make it a little more worth my while and make it a little more palatable for me to stay. But I did a lot of work. 2 years was a long time, and I wish I had quit sooner. just because it was, even after I became a full-time freelancer, it was still pretty demanding. And I found it was taking away valuable time at a low rate of pay, and for not, after my learning curve was pretty much, I'd gotten as much out of them as I possibly could from a learning curve perspective, it started to not be of value to me any longer. Shannon said she liked the goal-inspired writing prompts too. Yep. Awesome. Cynthia, Merry Christmas. Take care. And I am gonna wrap up today here. I have my final question. Is there anything between now and the end of the year that you're going to be working on? It doesn't have to be something we talked about today. It might be just an action item that maybe you're going to look to create some kind of a strategy, do some planning for yourself in the new year, or something, you know, between now. This is the time of year that I look, sit down and look at, okay, what have I accomplished in 2019? And what do I want 2020 to look like? So, let me know if there's anything in particular you're going to be working on. And obviously getting through the rest of your B2B launcher program, that's really important. Maybe you're going to focus on getting through another session between now and the end of December. Today is the 19th. So you've got a little short of 2 weeks with the holidays included. If not, maybe you're just going to, your action item is going to be to have a wonderful holiday with your family, which is one of the things I'm going to be working on. Allison's going to jump into session 4. Good for you. Felicia's going to work on mapping out business goals for each month in 2020. Great. Keep it simple. Don't overdo it. You want to really, you know, keep that mapping that out. If you do a month by month, keep it really simple. And then maybe scale. So January, I'm going to do X number of emails. And then February, I'm going to do X number of emails a week. And, you know, maybe just incrementally increase that. So keep that same goal, but just decrease it or you know, change it in some way from month to month. All right. Susan, planning for 2020. Beth, completing session 4, drafting actionable goals for first quarter and 2020 as a whole. Shannon's going to solidify business goals for 2020. Yay. Great. Charlene, completing session 5, set goals and plan prospecting. Working for self, I can get in the mindset of work never done. Absolutely. Absolutely. Excellent. Well, that's exciting. I am so glad that all of you are here today. Thank you again for being so participative and being involved in asking great questions. I'm really glad that you are all here. It's a good call today. And I want to wish you all happy holidays, no matter what holiday you're going to be celebrating in the next week or two. I wish you all the best. Enjoy your families. Take some time for yourselves. And take some time for your business too, to do a little bit of the planning you're talking about. And I look forward to connecting with all of you again in the new year. So I'll see you on Facebook, and take care, guys.